Says in the Megillah, Vayevoda Hadavr leMordechai, Vayaged leEsther Amalka, this plot of Bigson and Seresh against Achashverosh and against Esther became known to Mordechai, and he told it over to Esther. Vatomer Esther leMelech b'shem Mordechai, and Esther repeated it to the king in the name of Mordechai. It's pretty straightforward sounding. Mordechai found out about the plot against the king. He told Esther, and Esther told the king. But it's a little bit lengthy. Befrat, the words, Vayetomer Esther l'melech b'shem Mordechai, in the name of Mordechai. A, why is it important that she said in the name of Mordechai? B, it's kind of obvious that that's what she would do. He told it to her, so she's saying it over in his name. Unless she had a reason not to. So what do we learn from it? So Chazal tell us an amazing thing. They say from here, there's a klal that kol ha'imra davar b'shem ha'imra'i. Anybody who repeats something, says it over in the name of the one who said it originally, maybe Gulul Ha'ilam brings redemption to the world. They learn an amazing concept from here, and they seem to apply it across the board. And if you say something over in the name of someone else correctly, then you bring Gulul to the world. Now, obviously, this doesn't mean that, you know, if you ask somebody what's for lunch and he tells you it's egg salad, and you say, then somebody else asks you what's for lunch, and you say, well, it's egg salad, but Shmuel told me that it's egg salad. And then he's going to say that Chaim told me that Shmuel told me that it's egg salad. That's obviously not what we're talking about. That's ridiculous and kind of unnecessary. But it's referring to important things like Torah or perhaps other things that have an importance, and it's important to know who it came from. So that's what Chazal learned from here, because how did they learn it? So the simple answer is that over here we have the story of the Megillah. The Megillah was a time of Hester Panim, was a time where there was a gzeira against the Jews, and this perhaps was the beginning of the turnaround where Mordechai did something that eventually, not right away, but eventually enabled him to start bringing about the downfall of Haman, and the king started to appreciate Mordechai. So here was the story where it all began. So Chazal somehow learned that this idea of Omer Dover B'Shem Omer, that Esther repeated the plot in the name of Mordechai, was a key factor in leading to the ultimate Geula, the redemption of the Jews. So first of all, you can question that. Why is this such an important thing? Why is the saying over of the plot in the name of Mordechai so important, even in the Purim story? But the much bigger question is, how do they then take the next quantum leap and say, well, it's not only important in the Purim story, but anybody who says over anything B'Shem Omer is maybe Gula Olam. Well, what could they possibly mean by that? Is that big of a deal, really? So let's examine the idea of Omer Davar B'Shem Omer, just a simple understanding of it, and then see if we can go from there. The obvious simple pshat is what's behind. Why is it a good thing? Because if you Omer Davar B'Shem Omer, it means that you're giving the person credit when you could have taken the credit. Let's say somebody told you a nice Dvar Torah or a nice thought, and you say it over later, and the people who are listening appreciate it. Say, wow, brilliant, that was so fantastic, brilliant idea. So a person can be tempted to keep it for himself. Why should I say that it's not really my idea? I'll just pretend it's mine, and you know what I mean? I'll get the credit. Instead, he says, no, let me be honest, I'll tell you the truth. It's not me, it's the other guy. It's not my own chiddush, I heard it from someone else. So there's two nice things about it. First of all, you're being honest. Where you could have been dishonest and kept it for yourself. And secondly, you're giving the credit where it's actually due. You're pointing out the one who really deserves the credit for the insight, for the brilliance, or whatever it may be. So it's certainly a very nice thing to be Omer Davar B'Shem Omer. The question is, why is it such a big deal that Chazal say it's Mevi Geula La'olam? It's nice to smile at somebody in the morning too, but you don't find that Chazal say that everybody who smiles at someone else is maybe Geula La'olam, right? It's nice to help an old lady across the street, but it doesn't say that if you do that, you're maybe Geula La'olam. So why is this much more than that? That's the first question. Secondly, we should examine, and we're going to, what exactly is Geula? And is Geula different than Yeshua? Maybe it's maybe Yeshua La'olam. And third of all, This is a little bit more of an intricate question. It's a little bit funny, the setup of the phrase. It says, Kol ha'omer davar b'shem omrei. Shouldn't it say, Kol ha'omer amira b'shem omrei? Or if it wants to use the word davar, say, Kol ha'medaber davar b'shem davrei. Why is it omer? Then it switches to a davar, then it goes back to omrei. Okay, these are the questions that we want to get to. So in order to understand them, I'm going to tell you over an amazing medrash that says that the day that Haman had to take Mordechai around the city, right? You remember that Haman came in the morning and he was all revved up. He's going to tell Achashverosh about this terrible Jew, Mordechai, that he needs to be hung. And he even prepared the hanging pole for him. And everything went sideways. Achashverosh was just reading about how Mordechai had saved his life. Remember, they were going back to the Geula, to the original Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei, that Mordechai had saved his life. And he said, we have to do something to honor him. And Haman blurted out that we're going to take him around the city and so forth. Next thing you know, Achashverosh says to Haman, okay, buddy, it's your job. You find Mordechai and you dress him nicely and you carry him around and you give him all this great honor. So this is the bad news. Haman was not feeling good about this. Bechlal, he was a person who believed in omens and spirituality, and he didn't take this as a very good sign. He finally found Mordechai, and it says that when he found him, Mordechai was learning with his Talmidim. And he asked him, what are you learning? He said, I'm learning the halachas of the Karban Omer. If you make the Cheshbon, this is the second day of Pesach. So he was learning the halachas that were relevant to that day about the Karban Omer. The Karban Omer, just to remind everybody, is a carbon that we would bring of barley on the second day of Pesach, a small amount of barley. And until that point, you're not allowed to eat the new growth of that year, the wheat or the barley or the different grains. You had to wait until the carbon omer was brought. So the omer was matir. It allowed us to eat the new growth of that winter. So Haman asked him about, what are you learning? Tells him the Karban HaOmer. And apparently he also asked him to explain, something about the Karban HaOmer. What's the idea behind it? And what is it? And Haman says, at that point, it was kind of like a foreshadowing of his own doom. He says, I see that the weight of your handful of barley outweighs my 10,000 kikar kesef, my 10,000 talents of silver. Haman, as you recall, wanted to donate 10,000 kikar kesef to Achashverosh to pay for the annihilation of the Jews. It actually was turned down. We'll speak about that another time. Achashverosh said, it's okay, I don't need the gift. But Haman still looked at that and he said, that's like my mysterious nefesh. That was what I was willing to invest in destroying the Jews. And you guys, with your small little donation of barley, nothing, I mean, it's not even worth anything compared to what he was willing to invest. You've outweighed me. You're going to be able to defeat me, right? He was feeling down at the time. Later he rallied. He came back a little bit. But he said to Mordechai that, I see that you guys are going to beat me with this. Now, it's a very cool statement, but what does it mean? What's behind this that Haman was saying? So the first thing let's do is understand what is the reason of the Karban HaOmer. And the Medrash says an interesting thing. Each Karban, there's many different kinds of Karbanos. Each one has a reason. There's a logic behind it. For example, Karban Chatas, the logic is that a person sinned, he went against the Ribbono Shel Olam who created him, and he's, in essence, really, he shouldn't be in the world. This is God's world. If you go against him, you don't belong here. So essentially, he needs to himself be taken from the world. Instead, he says to Hashem, I'm sorry, and I'm going to bring this animal. The animal is similar to a human in certain ways, and he's going to say, I acted like an animal. I did Maisa Behema. I'm going to shech this animal as if this animal should be a stand-in, should be in my place, and you should take the animal instead of me. Okay, that's the logic or the understanding behind the Karban Chatas. So the Medrash says, what's the reason behind the Korban HaOmer? How come Hashem needs us to bring this barley before he allows us to eat the new tvua, the new grains? Because Hashem's not stam looking to bother us, give us more things to do. I mean, Avadi wants to give us more mitzvahs, but what do we need this carbon for? So the Medrash says like this. Now, just a little preface to the Medrash, right? If you would think about the person who, when he puts a meal on the table, can most deserve to sort of pat himself on the back and say, Magieli, I did this. It can take a stockbroker and take a car salesman. So these are guys that work and they have a job, and maybe they do a good job, maybe they don't, but they're not really producing very much in the world. It's not all that hard. They're convincing somebody to buy something, a stockbroker, befrat. He makes money whether the stock goes up or down. Either way, he makes his commission on the sale. But take a farmer. A farmer is somebody who actually, especially back in the olden days, but even today, they work. They do everything. They take this hard, stony piece of ground and they turn it through plowing and beating it and the idur and all these different malachos. They turn it into something which they can finally plant in. Once they plant, then they have to weed it and have to keep away the bugs. And there's so much work. And finally, the thing grows and they have to cut it down, and then they have to thresh it. And this is very difficult work, every stage of it. And they thresh it, and then they grind the wheat, and then they have to sift the wheat, until it finally gets to the house and turns into a loaf of bread. So there's so much work that went into it that when that bread hits the table, the farmer would be forgiven if he said, I thank myself. This is my bread. I created this. I made this happen. Says the Rabbeinu Shalalem, oh, wait a second, it's true, you worked very hard, and good for you, but you don't even realize that what you did was not even 20% of what went into this. For everything that you did, I did twice as much. You went to sleep at night, right? Your person can't stay up the whole day. You went to sleep. Who watched it at night to make sure that the bugs didn't come? Who made sure that the rain came at the right time? Who made sure that the rain didn't come more than it had to, not too early and not too late, didn't wash away the seeds? Who kept wild animals away? Who kept blight and various diseases from attacking the wheat? Who brought the sun every morning to shine on it and give it the vitamins that it needed? Who brought the right conditions in the ear? And so on and so forth. The birds eventually come and they want to attack. Who gave you the strength to do everything that you even did? So the Medrash says that the Rabbeinu Shlom is telling us, listen, Yitaka worked very hard. And in a way, you have the right to say to yourself, Shkoyach. But realize that behind it all was me. I was quiet. You didn't see what I did. You sort of take it for granted. It looks like nature. But without my part, nothing would get done. So before you start to eat from this new tvua, I want you, and this is the farmer, the guy who puts the most work in, to just recognize that behind the scenes, I was there. And that it was me that allowed you to do this and allows you to have this. It doesn't take much. I'm not asking for much. A handful of barley, a carbon, one little carbon is enough for the whole Klal Yisrael. After that, everybody say, it's all yours. Eat, turn it into beer and drink. Do whatever you want with it. But till that point, just recognize first that it was me. Okay, so that's what the Medrash says. When Mordechai explains this to Haman, they say in Yiddish an expression, everything turned black. He said, these are people that I was convinced were disconnected from their God. It was the time of what's called Hester Panim, and we explained that Hester Panim means that Hashem's face is turned away from us because our face is turned away from Him. So we're not connected, and we're not paying attention to Hashem, and He's not paying attention to us, and the game is over. And therefore, even when the Gzeir is going to come out against the Jews, they're not even going to be able to turn to anybody because Hashem's not there for them anymore. He's out of their lives. But now, Haman came to an interesting realization. He understood from the Korban HaOmer that Hashem is never not there. He just may be invisible, but He's going to be pulled back. He's always waiting behind the scenes to turn Himself back into our lives. And especially in this case, what would they learn? They were learning about the Korban Omer. The Korban Omer is something which is brought only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. There was no Beis HaMikdash. And by the time it rolls around next year, there's not going to be a Beis HaMikdash because the Jews are going to be destroyed before Pesach even turns up. So there's never going to be another Korban Omer. So why on earth is Mordechai learning this? He should be learning maybe Hilchus, how to dial Kiddush Hashem, because that's the next thing that's going to be relevant. From the fact that they were even learning the Korban Omer, Haman understood that, no, Mordechai wasn't mityaches. He didn't even pay attention to the Gzeira. Haman made Gzeira, there's not going to be a Beis HaMikdash, there's never going to be another Korban Omer in the world. It's irrelevant. Today is the day of Korban Omer. We learn Hilchus Korban Omer. Haman's Gzeira is going to disappear. It's not important. Just like Mordechai Taka said later, he said, Hashem's going to bring a Yeshua from somewhere. I don't got to worry about this. But even more to the point is the reasoning for Korban Omer. What's a Korban Omer? Korban Omer says, it looks like I did it. It looks like the farmer did it. But really, behind the scenes is the Ribbono Shel Olam. And we need to recognize him. The job and the work of Mordechai and Esther and Purim was exactly this, to look behind the scenes, to pull away the curtain, to go behind the Hester and to say, hey, wait a second, Hashem's not with us. Of course he's with us. We just don't see him. He's not bolet. He's not out there. But of course he's here. Right? That's why the Megillah is called Megillas Esther. Megillat Estel means legalot, to reveal the Hester, the hidden. The idea of the Megillah is the idea of the Korban Omer. That's why the whole Megillah, everybody knows this since you're a little kid, that an entire Megillah, you don't have the shame Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, openly. It's not open. It doesn't spell it. There's a few places where it's hidden. There's Ramazim, there's Rosh Tevis, there's Sefer Tevis, but it's never out there. Why? Because it's as if Hashem wasn't involved, as if he was in the background. Not just in the background, not in the picture at all. But the truth is, he was there completely. But just like we turned away from him at first, now it became our job to turn back to him. And by doing that, a person brings, that taka brings Geula L'Olam. So when Chazal said, Kol Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei, maybe Geula L'Olam, that anybody who says something in the name of the Omer brings Geula to the world, they didn't just mean that if somebody tells you Dvar Torah and you say, oh, it wasn't really me, it was the other guy, that's very nice. But the idea behind it is that you're pointing to someone that's not here. You could easily claim this Dvar Torah for yourself. You could easily claim it's my chiddush, it's my brilliance, it's my genius. And nobody is going to know. Instead, you say, no, looks like it's me, but it's not really me. It's somebody else told it to me. I got it from him. The Gemara is full of Amar Rava B'Shem this, Amar Rava B'Shem. Everybody's B'Shem someone else. Why? Because they're being Mekayim, this Memra of Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei. You have to give the credit where it's really due. And that attitude and that mindset is what's going to bring about the Geula, because it's going, with the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's going to bring Hashem back into our lives, away from the Hester, back to us. That's the concept of Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei. And that's what Esther was, by putting this into the Megillah and saying that when Esther told over to the king, Atagid LaEsther B'Shem Mordechai, Atagid Esther LaMelech B'Shem Mordechai, that she told it to the king in the name of Mordechai, why is she putting that in? To emphasize to us the importance of giving the credit to where it's really due. It might have made sense for her actually to pretend that it was her chiddush. She'll get more credit in the king's eyes. Maybe that's better. Maybe even just going... Later on, there's a discussion between her and Mordechai. What's the right attitude? What's the right way to try to get the geula happening for the king? Happening for the Jews. Esther had one opinion. Mordechai had a different opinion. Right? Ultimately, she agreed with Mordechai. And she even wrote again in the Megillah that she had one idea. And Mordechai shot it down. She didn't have to put that in. But she's being honest. She's saying, no. The geula didn't come because of my idea. It wasn't my brilliance. It was the Ribbono Shel Olam working through Mordechai, and that's how it happened. She's being Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei. Okay, that's the first part. That's the beginning, just to explain what's the concept of Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei and why it's maybe Geula L'Olam. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back and explain the deeper ideas in the actual memra of Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei. You can see Mamish incredible things.